This weekend we did a workshop in Bangalore. I'm still in Bangalore. And part of the workshop dealt with how we become conditioned and what it means to be conditioned. And of course, how to get out of the conditioning. And welcome, Sushma. And my old friend Majesh. Is that Majesh from Canada? He's back with us after a long absence. So there is a book written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The name of the book is Jiva Dharma. And in Jiva Dharma, how should I say? Jiva Dharma deals with every aspect of Vaishnavism. It's a novel. But within the novel, everything about Krishna consciousness is explained. So we're going to read from that book and we're going to discuss it. And a lot of what's discussed in this book is interesting because it's information that we know. It's basic information, but it's explained in many ways more clearly or more gives a more in-depth explanation. And the book is, because it's a novel, it's written in the form of a discussion between hypothetical characters, and it's disciple and guru, and the disciple is asking questions. And in this chapter, they're asking questions about how they ended up in the material world, or we could say how we ended up in this mess, and why we're still here. So how did I get here? One of the primal questions which Sanatana Goswami asked Mahaprabhu, and Prabhupada quotes this often, he asked, who am I? And Prabhupada and Vedanta Sutra says, when you ask, who am I, then you become a human being. So here in this story, they're asking, how did we get here? So the same idea, how did we get here? How did we get out of here? Volume is on and off. Maybe, Paula V, I don't know. Maybe your internet's not, I don't know. Refresh again and see what happens. Anyone else? The book is Jiva Dharma. And Jiva Dharma means the of the jiva, the dharma of the jiva. So it goes from the very basics to the very esoterics of Krishna consciousness. Very interesting book. So I, yesterday, Jiva, I'll spell it. Jiva Dharma. Jiva means of the jiva, of the living entity. So it's an interesting book, which I've also referred to in preparations for my japa classes, because it has a lot about the holy name. So I took notes on this, and I thought I could read from the notes. So, everybody ready? Get situated. Sit back, relax. And here we go. So the first question begins with how the living entities, well, the chapter actually begins by explaining there are some living entities who are Krishna's eternal associates, and they never have contact with Maya. So then the question came, how is it that the jivas, the other jivas, have contact with Maya? And so he begins. This is the fictional character, Rajanath, is asking, I believe in this case, Raghunath Das Babaji, asking questions. So, how did we end up here? Good question, right? Just like, let's say you ended up in jail. You got drunk one night, you went unconscious, and you ended up in jail. And then you had no idea that you're in jail. Or you got in a car accident and you ended up in the hospital and you wake up and there's bandages on your head and you don't remember that you got in the accident. So naturally you'll ask, how did I end up here? What happened? So that's what he's asking, and that's the question everyone should ask. That's what brings us to Krishna consciousness, because Krishna consciousness answers that and it gives the solution. So Raghunath Das Babaji says, they have rejected Sri Krishna, hence they are being penalized by the Maya Shakti, who binds them with three chains in the form of the three modes of material nature, namely sattva, raja, and tama. Furthermore, she covers the surup. Surup means one's identity. Literally means one's original form. She covers the surup of the jiva with the subtle body and then the gross body, thus imprisoning the jiva in the excruciating cycle of karmic reactions, which at times heaves them up to heaven or pushes them down to hell. Now, when I read this, and probably you're thinking the same thing, a thought comes, why would I choose to be put in a situation like this? Of course, we didn't know this was the situation, just like often we make choices based on thinking something will make us happy, but it turns into a mess. But if we knew it was going to turn into a mess, we wouldn't have made the choice. But we made the choice because we thought it was going to be enjoyable. So let's go back and read this again and explain it a little more. First thing that's being said is we reject Krishna. There's a point in the history of the jiva where the jiva makes a decision. And that decision is, do I want to serve Krishna or do I want to imitate Krishna? And of course, when you tell people, and even we're devotees, it's still difficult to acknowledge that we're trying to imitate Krishna. But it's true. Maybe not like Kamsa was trying to imitate Krishna, maybe not like Hitler was trying to imitate Krishna, but Krishna's the enjoyer and Krishna's the controller. So we are definitely trying to enjoy. There's no question about it. Right? Anyone out there not trying to enjoy? Raise your hand. Actually, conditioned life, at every moment we're thinking, will this make me happy? Or will this cause me pain? And fear, if you don't understand fear well, really what fear is the thinking that if I do this, it's going to put me in anxiety, or it's not going to make me happy, or if I do this, it's going to cause pain. That's what fear is. So you can see, fear or worry, we're worried about a situation which is what? Unpleasant. This is going to be unpleasant. Or the way things are going, it looks like it's going to be unpleasant. So unpleasant means pain, or it means less comfort, less pleasure. So we're very much wired like that. That's the condition response. So we made a choice. Is it about Krishna or is it about me? Can I take that position? Can I actually enjoy without being enjoyed by Krishna? Can I do it without having to be enjoyed by him? In other words, we are prakriti. Prakriti means the enjoyed. Prakriti is female. So we enjoy, spiritually we enjoy by being enjoyed. And materially we so-called enjoy by trying to enjoy, by trying to usurp the position of the enjoyer, take it over, and try to enjoy that way. So there's only two ways to do it. Either you serve the enjoyer, or you try to become the enjoyer. Now, as you advance spiritually or you become more pious, your tendency or the strength with which you try to enjoy or how you enjoy can be more refined. It can go higher up in the modes of nature. It can be more religious. It can be more animalistic, more demoniac. But the same propensity is there. Even very religious people, most of them are motivated to serve God to get something. So still that enjoyer consciousness is there. So then, first sentence, they have rejected Krishna. Okay, so we know why. Hence, the next point, they are being penalized by Maya Shakti. Okay, as Prabhupada says, we've broken the law. Now we're being put in the prison. Who binds them? Being penalized. Okay, so Maya Shakti is like a policeman and a judge and the superintendent of the prison house. So, okay, You've broken the law. You're not the enjoyer. You're actually enjoyed, but now you've taken a false position. And in that false position, you've broken the law. So now what happens? You have to leave your position. As we say, tatasta, the jiva is tatasta. Tatasta means we are marginal, so we have the choice. We can be in our swarup, our original consciousness, or we can be in a false consciousness. We can cover our swarup. And so when you cover your swarup, or when we cover our swarup, then we are put into the prison, it's a reformatory prison. It's not. And there's nice things to eat in the prison, as you know. Krishna has provided many nice things in this world. And we're bound. And prisoners in this prison are bound by chains. And here we learn that the chains are the three modes of material nature, sattva, rajas, and tamas. And the understanding is, as long as a living entity is under the influence of the modes of nature, one must take birth in the material world. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, those who die, those who die in the mode of ignorance go down, they become animals. We're talking here about human beings. And those who die in the mode of passion take birth on the earthly planet as human beings, and those who die in goodness, they go up to the higher planets. So as long as you're in the modes of nature, it means still remaining in the material world. And those who are transcendental, they don't take birth. They're no longer bound. So now the example's given, nice example. Well, this example's not given yet. It's given later. Well, it's not even given in my notes. I'll give it to you now. The mode of goodness is compared to a gold chain. The mode of passion is compared to a silver chain. And the mode of ignorance is compared to a iron chain. So, it's still a chain even though it's gold. It's just a nicer chain. So, sattva-gun, life is nicer in sattva-gun, but it's still within the material world. So, it's still a guna. Guna is a chain or a rope. So, it's just, it's like imagine three ropes, and they're pulling you, but they're pulling you to different places. So tamagun is pulling you down. Rajagun is pulling you into passionate work, very self-centered work. And tamagun is pulling you more into activities based on knowledge, activities based more on renunciation, detachment. Activities which are closer to spiritual, or sometimes they're, you can't even... No, you don't really notice the difference between them. Knowledge and goodness is that I'm spirit soul. So that's spiritual knowledge also. So sometimes knowledge and goodness is spiritual knowledge. And goodness pulls you up. Does that make sense? Easy journey to other planets. Yeah, you can actually go to the moon without a spaceship. So Prabhupada says that we should cultivate goodness, because goodness, it's conducive to Krishna consciousness. Because as I said, some of the activities in goodness are Krishna conscious activities, or they're activities which support Krishna consciousness. So it's either directly or it's supportive. But if it's not connected with Krishna consciousness, it's just a higher aspect of material life. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says people in goodness are happier. Because they live according to principles, dharmic principles, dharmic, religious principles. So they're less sinful, they're more pious. If we're more pious, the results will be better, there'll be less suffering. If we're more sinful, there'll be more reactions, negative reactions. So, and Prabhupada says, and then what happens is when they live in goodness, they experience a higher happiness than people in passion or ignorance, but then they become attached to living in goodness. So they remain, maybe they go up in their next life, but they remain in the material world. So you're in the prison, but you have a gold chain. Maybe you have a better prison cell. It's bigger. you have your own cell, maybe you have more privileges, but you're still in the prison. So then, the next statement, she covers the sarup of the jiva with the subtle body and the gross body. So then, I want to imitate Krishna, I want to enjoy. So what happens? My identity as a soul is covered. So I forget that I'm a soul, I forget I'm servant, and I get a gross body, which is a funny word. Prabhupada uses this gross body because we would say, oh, your body is gross. That would be an offense, wouldn't it? Look at you, you're gross. But gross in this sense doesn't mean yuck, you're gross. It means as opposed to subtle. Subtle body you can't see because it's subtle. And the gross body you can see. So the external and the subtle. That's what it means, gross body. Not that the body's gross, although you could say the body's gross. And if you cut it open, it is pretty gross. But that's not the sense that's meant here. It means the elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. The body's made of these elements, so gross elements. Thus imprisoning the jiva in the excruciating cycle of karmic reactions, which at times heaves him up to heaven or pushes him down to hell. So now whatever you do in the prison has a reaction. So it's not we're just living here and freely acting and there's no reaction. But everything we do has a reaction. And so this is how our future is determined. By every action, there will be a reaction which will determine our future. So we already described that. You go up or you go down. And here the word excruciating is used. The excruciating cycle of karmic reactions, because some of those reactions are painful, either emotionally or physically, and always painful spiritually, because now we're separated from Krishna. And the problem when we're separated from Krishna and the problem when we're not engaged in Krishna consciousness, the huge problem is we're trying to be happy and it doesn't work. So it's excruciatingly painful in that sense. I did kirtan last night without a microphone. And I was screaming, so my voice is... yes, it's hoarse. I sound like a rock and roll singer right now. So, next paragraph. For the residents of the spiritual world, prema being their life and soul, they do not even know that lamentation, death, or fear actually exist. So these are the eternal associates of Krishna who've never left the spiritual world. They're not even aware. There's just such a thing as lamentation, or such a thing as fear, or there's such a thing as death. Amazing. So, that's a thought to plant within our consciousness. They don't even, what we're experiencing, what is normal for us, they don't even know that it exists. And part of the illusion is we're so used to it that most people just accept it and don't even question it. And later on, he talks about it. This is Raghunath Das Babaji talking about it. So he continues. The transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord are also present in the jiva, but to a very small degree. In other words, we have many of the qualities Krishna has, but to a small degree. The quality of free will natural to Sri Krishna is therefore innate to the constitution of the jiva, excuse me, and microscopic in content. In other words, Raghunath Das Babaji is saying Krishna is independent, Swarat, he's completely independent, nothing controls him. We're not completely independent, but because we have some of the qualities of Krishna, because we're part of him and we have the nature of Krishna, we have some independence. The quality of free will natural to Krishna is innate to the constitution of the jiva and microscopic in content. So we have a little bit of free will. We choose it. We're not bound. It feels like we're bound because sometimes the modes of nature are forcing us to act, but at any moment we can stop that course of action and by free will choice decide I'm not going to take another step in that direction. It's just more difficult when you're in the mode of ignorance or in the mode of passion than it is in the mode of goodness, because in those modes the forces, the chains are pulling more strongly away from intelligent action. In goodness, the actions are more guided by intelligence, so free will is more powerful, it's easier to use. But we always have that choice. When the jiva makes proper use of his independence, he remains connected with Krishna. But by misusing his independence, he disassociates himself from the Lord and is attracted to exploiting and enjoying material nature. So as soon as we come in contact with material nature is an energy of Krishna and it's attractive. And so we become attracted to it. And one of the reasons we become attracted to it is because we're in the mood of enjoyer. You see, like a devotee, when he sees, or we're talking here a pure devotee, and we're trying to be pure devotee. So when a pure devotee sees matter, he sees it connected to Krishna. He doesn't see this is different. He sees this is all Krishna's, and we use it for Krishna. So there, for him, there is no matter. Matter is a stage of consciousness where you see something separate from Krishna. Now, we think, no, how can that be? It's matter, it's dead, it's different, it's not alive. Okay, that's true. But from Krishna's perspective, it's all one energy. It's all his energy. And similarly, from the perspective of a pure devotee, it's all one energy. It's all meant to be used for Krishna. So fundamentally, the definition of matter is an energy which is separated from Krishna. And Krishna says in the Gita, bina prakriti, it's my separated energy. But the separation is in the consciousness of the person looking at it. It's not really separated. It's Krishna's energy and nothing is separated. Everything is Krishna. So the only separation is that we see it separate. And why do we see it separate? Because unless we see it separate, we won't try to enjoy it. So because we've come to enjoy the material world, our consciousness naturally separates these things and we look at them and say, what can I get? It's all potentially mine. I just have to figure out how to get it. It's all potentially mine to enjoy. Oh, I wish I had that. I would like to have that. In spiritual consciousness, you don't think, I wish I had that. I would like to have that. You think only in terms, can this be used for Krishna? Of course, you have basic maintenance. So you like certain things. You like certain foods. But still, as a devotee, you see it in relation to Krishna. You don't see yourself in the center as the enjoyer. So he disassociates himself from the Lord and is attracted to exploiting and enjoying material nature. So Maya becomes attractive only because there's a desire to enjoy it. So how do we understand? It's just like when you're hungry, food is enjoyable. When you're full, food is not enjoyable. Even your favorite food, you don't want to eat it when you're full. It's just not enjoyable anymore. Is sleeping enjoyable if you're not tired? Do you just think, oh, sleeping's so enjoyable, and you had enough sleep. You don't go lay down, generally, unless you're strongly influenced by the mode of ignorance. You don't just lay down because sleeping's enjoyable. It's enjoyable to the degree that you're tired, right? Or food is enjoyable to the degree that you're hungry. So matter is enjoyable to the degree that you want to be the enjoyer. And that's why the symptom of bhakti is detachment. As one changes that mentality from enjoyer to enjoyed, from served to servant, things lose their attraction because now you're not in the center and the whole you're not this little entity trying to enjoy everything you look at, smell, touch, taste is different. So understand, if you're feeling attracted to things in this material world, it's only because the appetite is strong. If you don't have the appetite, it's not attractive. It's only attractive to the person with the appetite. Things that are attractive to women, many things are not attractive to men, and vice versa, because men and women are different. So So their appetites are different. Some of the things are attractive to both. And even amongst men or women, some things are attracted to certain women and not to others, and certain men and not to others, based on the modes, based on the culture. So that's why things are attractive. So I'm going to tell you something really interesting. Now pay attention to this. It's quite an interesting philosophical point. It's said in the Nectar Devotion that when offering bhoga, food to Krishna, no one should look at it. Of course, if you're preparing it, you have to look at it, but nobody else should look at it. And it said, for example, if a dog has looked at it, or someone has looked at it, you can't offer it. And the reason is, because if somebody looks at it before it's offered, they'll look at it with the intense intention of enjoying it. They'll, as we say in the ISKCON lingo, they'll lust after it. Oh Prabhu, I was lusting after, and then you write in what you were lusting after. So you'll see something's going to be offered to Krishna, and you'll think, oh, that looks good, I'd like to eat that. So if a dog sees something that looks pleasing to eat, and it's going to be offered to Krishna, can't offer it now. And strictly speaking, you can't offer food from a market. You have to grow it, because people who go to the market will see, oh, that's a nice orange, that's a nice this or that. They'll walk by, and then you'll go and buy it. So they've already eaten it in their mind. And now, because they've already eaten it, you can't offer it to Krishna. So how does this relate to the philosophy? Well, the philosophy is that only Krishna is spiritual, and you can only offer something spiritual. So what is spiritual? Spiritual is something which you see meant to be used in Krishna's service. So you go to the store, you see the banana, you think, these are nice bananas, these would be nice to offer to Krishna. You've seen them as spiritual, you've no longer seen them as material, because you didn't think, these are nice bananas, I'd like to eat them. You take them home, you cut them up, you offer them to your deities. The whole time, you've only seen them as something spiritual. Because material, by definition, means you see it as an object of your enjoyment. But if you see it as an object of Krishna's enjoyment, it's spiritual. So Prabhupada said, you can only offer something spiritual to Krishna, which means you can only offer something if from the very beginning you saw that it was for Krishna's use. So there, if you see it for your use, it's material, and you can't offer anything material to Krishna. Interesting, isn't it? Okay. Let's see. When the jiva makes proper use of his independence, he remains connected with Krishna, but by misuse of his independence, he disassociates himself from the Lord and is attracted to exploiting and enjoying material nature. So now we know why Maya is so attractive, because we have the appetite. If we fill ourselves up with Krishna consciousness, all of a sudden, Maya doesn't look so good anymore. And if we fill ourselves up with a lot of Krishna consciousness, Maya won't look good at all. In fact, we won't even be interested. Okay. Next paragraph. Our philosophy is that it's important to understand how we got into this mess. Because by understanding how we got into this mess, we reverse the process and then we get out. Reverse the consciousness that caused it. So, developing the despicable quality of false pride, he thinks, I am the enjoyer of everything I survey. Thus, the five levels of nescience, now this is interesting, when the living entity takes the consciousness of I am the enjoyer of everything I survey, his consciousness shifts from servant to the five following qualities which cover him. Number one, tamisra. Rebellious rejection of the Lord's service. This is all, once we make that decision to separate from Krishna, this is what happens. Rebellious rejection of the Lord's service. Anda tamisra, considering death to be the ultimate conclusion. In other words, life ends at death. You identify with the body. Ignorance of one's position as a jiva. I don't know I'm a jiva, which means I don't know I'm a servant of Krishna. That's called tamas. Moha, the illusory bodily conception, which naturally comes when you forget your jiva, and maha moha, attachment for material enjoyment. So that's interesting. Moha means illusion, maha moha means great illusion. And so the great illusion is we become attached for material enjoyment. Why do we become attached to material enjoyment? Because we're out of our constitutional position as the enjoyed. When we're in our constitutional position as the enjoyed, we enjoy through serving Krishna. So we don't have to look for enjoyment outside that relationship. It's natural to the soul. Soul is blissful when connected to Krishna. The Ladini Shakti influences the heart of the soul. So as we just read, the soul doesn't even know there's such a thing as lamentation. The soul doesn't know distress or fear or anxiety. It's not part of the constitution of the soul. But when we go out of the constitution of the soul, then we're out of this natural position of enjoyment, and then what happens? We try to figure out how to enjoy, and that's a huge problem. So we become very attached to enjoyment because we don't have it anymore. Now, we were talking this weekend about a really interesting and important phenomena, the phenomena of envy. And envy often has its cause or manifestation in the fact that we're not happy, so we're envious of somebody else. We want what they have. And if you think about it, appreciation is actually the opposite of lust, because appreciation is a form of satisfaction with what one has. And lust is dissatisfaction with what one has, one wants more. So envy and dissatisfaction, or envy and appreciation, are also opposites. So when we're satisfied, it's easy to appreciate somebody else or other things. When we're not satisfied, it's more difficult to appreciate because we want more. So if you ever find envy in your heart, ask yourself, is the cause of this envy partially due to the fact that I'm just not satisfied in my spiritual life? I'm not satisfied with what I have, and therefore I'm envious of what someone else has. So these five qualities cloud the pure spiritual consciousness of the jiva. The sole cause of why the jiva becomes either liberated or conditioned lies in the proper or improper use of his minute independence. So this is how we began, and now the point is being made again. So this whole mess, which we created for ourselves, all happened by misuse of free will. We made a wrong choice, and now there is a consequence to that choice. It is a huge consequence. And here we are, folks, today in these bodies. But fortunately, we've come to Krishna consciousness, and we're working our way out of here. Congratulations, folks. It's taken us a long time, but we've made it. Now, Vrajanath is going to speak about I'll explain again. Radhikali Radhika. When we look at something with material eyes, it becomes material, and we can't offer it. I'll explain that again. It's an important point. So I was saying, what is the difference between material and spiritual? We often make the distinction between material and spiritual that the soul is spiritual, Krishna is spiritual, the spiritual world is spiritual, the inhabitants of the spiritual world are spiritual, and aside from the soul and the spiritual world, everything else is material. Everything in this world is material. Now, we have that's true, but we have a more expanded definition of spiritual. And for us as devotees, as practitioners of bhakti, spiritual means anything in relation to Krishna. And therefore, we say, if we use this object in Krishna's service, it becomes Krishnized or spiritualized. Right now, I am recording this class. I have a little recorder. It's actually sitting on my lap right now. And this recorder is now being used in Krishna's service, so it's actually spiritual. Okay, it's made of plastic and metal. It's not going to exist forever. But spiritual, because it's only being used for Krishna, and I see it only in Krishna's service. So what determines whether this is spiritual or material is how I see it and how I use it. So, if you go shopping and you see everything in the store that could be used in Krishna's service for that purpose, then you're only seeing spiritually. So you buy an apple, you buy a banana, you buy an orange, and you think, I will offer these to Krishna. So you've seen the apple, banana, and orange as spiritual items. You've connected them to Krishna. You didn't connect them to you. Oh, I like apples. Let me buy this one. I like this one. Let me eat it. Now you're seeing it as material in connection with you. So anything in connection with Krishna is spiritual. Anything in connection with our personal enjoyment is material. So, what does that mean? That means if we see something for our enjoyment, we've already enjoyed it. And we've already, it's like you want to send me a sweater. Say, I want to get a Mahatma sweater. I like Mahatma. I want to get him a sweater. So you go to your closet, you pick out one of your old sweaters and you send it to me. No, you don't do that. You go buy a new one, right? Why? Because that sweater is your sweater and you've used it. You buy me a new one and then you think, this is a really nice sweater. Let me wear it for a few months and then I'll give it to Mahatma. You don't do that either because you bought it for me. So it's not for you, it's for me. The whole time you went shopping, you looked at sweaters, and every sweater you thought, I wonder if Mahatma will like that. I wonder if, what color does he like? What color does he wear? And I have to figure out what size he is. And you call my wife and say, what color is he? What color does he like? What size is he? So you're meditating on me. You're only meditating on how I will enjoy this sweater. You're not thinking, what do I like? And I'll wear it for a while. And I'll just buy what I like and hope he likes it. No, you're thinking, oh, what will Krishna like? Of course, when we're cooking, there's some consideration. Will I even eat this? So you think, okay, you know, Krishna likes most things. He likes the love. So, you know, does Krishna like this kind of orange or that one? I don't really know. But I'm going to buy it for Krishna and I'm going to offer it to him. So as long as you're thinking about offering it to Krishna, as long as you're thinking, you might look at the sweater and go, I like this sweater, it's beautiful, I hope he likes it. That's still okay, because you're still thinking you want me to like it, you're thinking of my pleasure. So when you see that, what are you thinking about the whole time you're shopping? You're thinking about me. And you're seeing that sweater in relation to me. So when you see the whole world as everything in the world to offer to Krishna for his enjoyment, you're only seeing the world as Krishna's, as connected to Krishna, as part of Krishna. You're not seeing anything, you're not seeing a material world anymore. It's a spiritual world for you. If you go out today, you could make an experiment, and this is a tangible, realistic experiment. If everything you look at, you think, how could we use that for Krishna? For example, you're driving through a neighborhood and you see a beautiful home and you think, wow, it would be nice to have a center, a Krishna conscious center in a home like that. I mean, that would attract so many people and we could teach this and that. Or that's beautiful architecture. We could, really nice to have a temple that had a lawn like that. Or that color, I like the color of that house. It's a beautiful color, right? It'd be nice to build a temple with that color. So you're just looking at someone's house, but you're thinking, you're relating it somehow to Krishna. I mean, it's not that you could relate everything to Krishna, but that's an example. And you might see something beautiful. You just think, that would be so nice if we had that in the Krishna consciousness movement. Or, you know, you see a beautiful car and you think, well, that would be so nice for my Guru Maharaj if we could drive, we could pick him up at the airport in this car. That would be so. There's actually one devotee. He bought a Mercedes-Benz solely for the purpose of picking up the senior devotees that come to his country to visit. That's what the car's for. He can afford it, and so that's why he bought it. So you see what I'm saying? He saw the Mercedes-Benz in relation to Krishna. So if you see everything somehow, or you can connect it to Krishna. Of course, some things can't be connected, so you don't think about enjoying. They're just neutral, but it is. If you can somehow see things connected to Krishna, or you just see somebody on the street, you're walking down the street and someone's playing music and the guy's really good, and you think, so you think, how can I connect that to Krishna? Because I'm enjoying the music. He's like, no, he's the talent. That talent is Krishna. And so even though he's playing this music and, you know, it's going in your modes of nature and you're grooving with it and you're going, you're catching yourself and you go, oh, okay, I shouldn't be doing that. You see, this Shakti that he has, this talent he has, it's coming from Krishna. So that way you've connected it. So you're not putting yourself as the enjoyer, but you're always trying to connect it to Krishna. So in that way, you see everything, just like in relation to Krishna. Just like, let's say, you're growing, you have a garden and you're growing vegetables. So the carrots are coming up and you're getting all excited, and the tomatoes are coming up and you're getting all excited, and the squash is coming up and it's growing nicely and it's really green, and the tomatoes are really red and the carrots are really green. I mean, orange. And you think, why are you excited? Because you can offer this to Krishna. These are your little babies. You cultivated them from birth. Your little babies, you get to offer them to Krishna. You're all excited. Jai, Haribo, look at this coming so nice. I can offer this to Krishna. That means from the inception, from day one, you never saw those carrots as matter. You only saw them as spirit. You never saw the tomatoes or squash as matter, because you only saw them for Krishna. And that's the only thing that can be offered to Krishna. What you see as connected for his enjoyment, you see spiritually, and you can only offer spiritual things to Krishna. Whereas if you see it for your enjoyment, you can't offer it. Which is why we cover the plates before we do the offering. Okay. That's the goal. We see everything for Krishna's enjoyment. Okay. Now, Bhajanath asks a question. Very good question. And this is, pay attention, because those of you who teach Krishna consciousness, you're going to get asked this question. You've probably been asked this question many times. Sri Krishna is Karunamaya, unlimitedly merciful. Yet why did he create such weak jivas? As a result of their weakness, they became lured into subjugation by Maya. Good question, isn't it? I mean, Krishna ultimately created this arrangement. Why did he create this arrangement? We're weak. Answer. Krishna is Karunamaya. Karunamaya means full of Karuna, full of mercy. But he is also Leelamaya, dynamic and eternally engaged in pastimes. Leela means pastimes. And Maya in this connection doesn't mean illusion, it means full of. With the view that the jiva could become an active partner in his various leelas, in other words, to get the jiva back in his leelas, the Supreme Lord has made him versatile and capable of rising from his humble position as a marginal being to the soaring heights of Mahabhav, the highest spiritual consciousness, which is unlimited and transcendental. What is he saying? He's saying, we have free will, but although the free will brings us into the material world, we also have the free will to get out of the material world. In other words, he's saying, it's not that when we come into this material world, the free will becomes so weak that we can't use it anymore to become Krishna conscious. That's that. If Krishna did that, then you could say, why did he do that? It's not fair. But he didn't do that. We made a free will choice to come here, but Krishna has always given us the free will to get out of it. And so we can't ultimately say, well, why did God do this? Because it's not eternal damnation. I mean, if you're a Christian, you could ask that question. Or if you believe in Christianity, you could ask that question, why would God condemn someone eternally? But that's not what's being said here. It said eternally you have free will choice. That means eternally, at any moment in eternity, we can get out of this mess. And then the sentence ends by saying, the highest, and come to the highest spiritual consciousness, which is unlimited and transcendental. So our original form, our sarup, can be revived at any point. It's not that once you come into the material world, your sarup is permanently covered and you can't uncover it. You can uncover it exactly as it is and come to the highest stage of Krishna consciousness. So, Prabhus and Matajis, don't give up. There's still hope. To make the jiva strongly determined and facilitate his ascension to this divine position, the Lord has also created the various levels of material energy from gross matter up to ahankara, which reaches its depths with misidentification with matter. In other words, what he's saying is, when you make the wrong choice, you suffer. And that's to help us get out. That's the process. Should the jiva choose the path of material progress, the inert matter presents practically insurmountable obstacles in the jiva's search for supreme happiness. That is Krishna's mercy. That's what he's saying. He's saying, you've come into this material world. You've forgotten who you are. Krishna, out of his mercy, gives you the free will to get out of this world, and out of his mercy, he creates a situation in which it is impossible to be happy. Why does he create that situation? So someday in your sojourn in this world, it will dawn on you that I am doing the wrong thing, I am thinking in the wrong way, and therefore I'm not happy. I don't know what it is, I don't know why I'm not happy, but I sense something is wrong here. And as that song, who was it, Jimi Hendrix or someone? There's got to be some way out of here. We start thinking, there's got to be something better than this. This can't be what God wants for me. It just doesn't make sense. And I think every time you're on the highway and you see a car accident where someone suffers, or you see suffering, that thought comes. This can't be. This is not it. This is not where we're supposed to be. This is the wrong place. I'm in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people. That's the material world. That what he's saying here is that is a manifestation of Krishna's mercy, because if Krishna didn't do that, we would stay separated from our eternal loving relationship forever, and we'd have no desire to reconnect with him. And therefore, we'd be caught in samsara eternally, which is not the way Krishna arranged it. Let's read on. The jivas who are moving down to this material entanglement, seeking only to satisfy their senses, are divorced from their swarup and thus increasingly distance themselves from the Supreme Lord. Divorced from their swarup. What's the swarup? I am soul and I am enjoyed by Krishna. So I've divorced myself from that identity. I've assumed another identity. I am the enjoyer. They become more and more depraved, but the infinitely compassionate Lord, with his transcendental abode and eternal associates, descends to earth and appears before them in person to offer them the opportunity of elevation to the highest spiritual destination. That is Krishna's mercy. He doesn't forsake us. The jivas who take to this opportunity to elevate themselves gradually rise to the transcendental realm and acquire the same position as the Nitya Parshadas. Parshadas means Krishna's eternal friends. So, suffering is Krishna's mercy. Unhappiness is Krishna's mercy. Why do I have to suffer like this? Well, because we're thinking in the wrong way. That's the only reason we're suffering. Because we're doing the wrong things. Because we've adopted a swarup, a nature, which is not who we are. And therefore, the way the world works is you can't be happy and you can't enjoy unless you follow dharma. Why does everybody get drunk on New Year's Eve? I mean, they're so happy. The people are so satisfied in their lives. They're enjoying so much that they have to forget who they are. No, it's because they're suffering. Because they're suffering from forgetfulness of their identity as servant of Krishna. And the only way that most of them can be happy and party is to forget who they have to forget this false identity not by becoming Krishna conscious. Then you forget your false identity, but by going into the mode of ignorance and numbing themselves from that identity. So it's not a happy place, and it's a good thing it's not a happy place. And every time that we have a situation in which we're worried, we're in anxiety, there's fear, at least we should think, okay, I don't like this, but it's actually good. Because it's just reinforcing that I made a bad decision, and now I'm in this mess. Just like, let's say you get in an accident. Somebody hits you from the rear. So it's not your fault. They ran into you. They were on their cell phone texting and they weren't noticing, and it happened to me. Somebody about 6 years ago smashed into us because he was texting. So then you think, this stupid, whatever, you can choose your favorite word, and then rant and rave about what he did. But every time we get in the car to drive, we are taking a chance that some stupid whatever who's texting on their cell phone could rear-end us, right? So ultimately, if you decided, I'll just walk, maybe at least if you might, some drunk driver may drive on the sidewalk and run you over, that's possible, but at least you won't get in a car accident. I mean, the chances of someone driving on the sidewalk are rare. So if you don't get in a car, there's no chance of having a car accident. So you made a choice to drive in a car, and maybe you didn't have a choice. It's the only way you could get to work, so you have to do it. But when the person rear-ends you, you can think, well, that's the chance I take, that there's crazy drivers out there. So the same way, when we don't like things in our life or in this world, we have to say, well, I came here. I made that choice. So it was a bad choice, and I'm continually making bad choices. And if we're in anxiety or we're miserable, it's probably because we're making a lot of bad choices. We made one huge bad choice, and now on top of that, we're making a lot of little bad choices. As we said before, when you come to the mode of goodness, your choices are more in line with Dharma. So you're happy. You're not causing yourself suffering. When you make choices in passion and ignorance, they result in suffering. It's right there in the Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, the modes of nature. Happiness in the mode of ignorance, it's not happy. It's miserable. It's the happiness, but the happiness of being a drunk. How happy are drunks? They think they're happy, but it's misery. They're destroying their life. So the happiness is based on misery. The happiness and passion, you get some pure happiness, which then turns into misery later. You can separate the happiness from the misery. You get so-called pure happiness, and then as a consequence, you get misery. In ignorance, you get the happiness and misery at the same time. They're all mixed together, right? You drink, you're so-called happy, and you destroy your life at the same time. In passion, you love the lady, you love the woman loves the guy, they have a great time, and then it turns, and 3 months later, they're fighting and screaming, and she's crying, and so it was great for a while, then it turns into a mess. That's passion. And in goodness, it's austerity, it's self-discipline, it's sacrifice, and then it turns out good, and then you get the enjoyment. So you get higher happiness, less suffering and goodness. But if we're suffering, if there's any problem in our life, it's usually due to wrong ways of thinking and wrong ways of acting, and sometimes it's simply a reaction to past karma, and sometimes Krishna is using that past karma because if he uses it, it'll purify something within us that needs to be purified. It's an interesting point. If you're spacing out, wake up, I'm going to say something that you'll be interested in knowing. We are told that when we become a devotee, our karma is absolved, or it's slowly absolved. And at one point, it's completely absolved. You chant Hare Krishna, Prabhupada said, it's like pulling the plug out of the fan, and the fan is slowing down. So then the question comes, if I'm suffering, is it karma or is it Krishna's desire? So one of the acharyas says, an interesting point, he said, that if there's some karmic reaction, like let's say there's a reaction we do something, we try to enjoy something, and we get a negative reaction. The negative reaction is to purify the tendency we have to enjoy that object. Because if we enjoy it and we suffer, that suffering can purify us of the desire to enjoy it, because we put the two together and we say, every time I try to enjoy this, I get hammered on the head. So maybe I shouldn't do this anymore. Maybe, and you know, after we get hammered like 14 million times, we start coming to our senses and we think, so I'm doing this and I get hammered in the head. And I've done it 13,999,999 times and I still get hammered in the head. I think I get it now. Okay, maybe I shouldn't do that. Karma is meant to purify us of the desire to do that thing that is keeping us away from Krishna. So, boom, we get knocked in the head. And so when you get knocked in the head, you're supposed to think, okay, Krishna's trying to purify me of this attachment because I keep thinking about this. I keep wanting to enjoy it. And the more I think about it, the more I want to enjoy it, the more I suffer. So Krishna sometimes uses our past karma where we're destined to suffer something if that suffering can purify us of the desire to do the action which caused the suffering. There's a desire in our heart to act in a certain way, and we have certain propensities. And if we suffer because of those actions, that suffering can purify us. So the karma is meant to remove that original seed to enjoy something, because we put it together and we say, I do this and I suffer. Now, as I said, we are sometimes pretty dull in that we continually suffer, but we don't put it together that I have the wrong attitude or I'm doing the wrong thing and that's why I'm suffering. This is very, very obvious in relationships. That we do so many wrong things often in relationships and things don't work out. And we don't revert back and say, oh yeah, I did this and that's why this happened. Anyway, that's how karma works. So, if you see any suffering in your life, understand number one, it's either a karmic reaction from the past or it's a karmic reaction from the present. You're creating it right now by what you're doing and what you're thinking. Or you thought and did something in the past and it's coming now to fruition, and try to trace back and see, well, what tendency do I have in my heart that this reaction is trying to purify me of? And then you'll begin to understand, oh, I have this desire to enjoy this, and every time I try to enjoy this, this situation happens. Put it together. So, Brajanath says, Brajanath is the disciple. Well, let me see, maybe, hold on a second, let's see where we left off. In this sense, the sufferings of a gross materialist are auspicious and the mercy of the Lord. Therefore, the misery suffered by the jiva in the pastimes of Sri Krishna, pastimes of Sri Krishna means this material world is one of Krishna's pastimes. So the misery suffered by the jiva in the pastimes of Sri Krishna is considered good and beneficial by far-sighted visionaries, while the myopic materialists abhor it as deathly suffering. So from the spiritual point of view, anything which gets us closer to Krishna is good. Just like if you love somebody and you're separated and you want to be with them for New Year's, for Christmas, whatever, and you have to undergo some tribulation, but it's okay if it brings you closer to them or it helps the relationship. Or not even if you want to be together, but if something, you went through some distress together, or sometimes you have a fight with someone you love, but after the fight, you realize what the problem is and you resolve it. So actually the fight was good. It actually made things better. So even though you went through suffering, now you're closer. You realize something about yourself. So if suffering enhances a relationship, if suffering brings us closer to Krishna, then from the spiritual point of view, it's welcome, it's good, if that's the end result. A little pain, but now I'm closer to Krishna. So Krishna knows what we need to go through. So sometimes he knows. I am a big enjoyer. I just like, my propensity to enjoy is huge, and I'm like a party animal, you know. Now I've become a devotee, and it's like, it's not easy because I just like, you know, my senses are wild. And so Krishna knows that. And he knows that deep inside, you want to be a devotee. So what does he do, party animal? He rains on your party. He rains on your parade. So you realize, that doesn't work, does it? And the more he does that, the more you start to mold your consciousness into, I am servant, I am not enjoyer. This is what works. And you begin to serve other devotees, you begin to serve Krishna, you begin to see your home in relationship to how I can use everything. You begin to ask yourself, when you start to do something, can I even connect what I'm doing to Krishna? Does this have anything to do with Krishna? Or is this just me trying to enjoy my five senses or my mind? And you become more and more aware of that. And as you do that, what you see is you actually enjoy life more. It becomes really enjoyable because now you're in your swarup as Nitya Krishnadas, as servant of Krishna. And that's how we enjoy. We can't enjoy any other way. It is like one of the most difficult life lessons for every aspiring bhakta, just to get this point. What's the point? That's the point we heard the first day we went into Hare Krishna temple. You're not the body, you're servant of Krishna. You're not the enjoyer. Why is it so hard to get? Because the enjoyer consciousness is deeply impregnated in the depths of our conditioning. We came to this world, that was our mission, to enjoy. We can call it mission impossible. We came with an impossible mission. And we are still here. We're still trying. It's an impossible mission. We haven't given it up. So we have such strong determination to enjoy. It's amazing. We are very determined, aren't we? You can see it in children. They come out of the womb with this propensity to enjoy. They are on fire. You cannot stop them. They'll grab everything. They'll put it all into their mouth. They want it all. Where do they learn that? They've been practicing that for millions of lifetimes. They are experts. Prabhus, we are expert at material enjoyment. Krishna consciousness means Krishna is the enjoyer. Whoa, put on the brakes, turn around, drive the car the other direction. We've been going in the wrong way for a long time. Yeah, it's not easy to turn it around, is it? Sometimes we turn it around and then while we're driving, we turn around the other way. We go, this doesn't feel comfortable. This feels awkward. I don't know. I don't like this. This is new. This is road. It's not familiar territory. I don't feel comfortable. I don't know. This is weird. That's our conditioning. That's just the reality that we're dealing with. So we accept that reality. We accept, okay, I'm conditioned to be an enjoyer. It's going to be there. It's going to come up in my effort to be Krishna conscious. But I understand I'm reconditioning that. My core belief, my core existence is I'm enjoyer. And now I have to recondition it to what? I am enjoyed. I'm not the enjoyer. I am to be enjoyed by Krishna. Even to be enjoyed by the devotees. I am the servant. That is not easy. How do we do it? We begin by doing it by acting in that way, by acting in that role. Even we don't feel like it, we still act in that role as servant. Let me serve you. Let me do something for you. Can I do some service in the temples? Anything? Can I sweep the floor? Just become a servant. We begin the process of reconditioning the subtle body. That is the beginning of getting out of Maya. So, it's 7:36. Now I'm going to see if you have any comments or questions. Okay. Yes. Okay, let's go back. Where are we? Cleared my doubt. Okay, yikes. I messed up big time. Offering food. Must improve. You're a newbie. I'm sure you understand. Yes. The intention. Okay, so here's a good point. We blow it often, right? don't we? I mean, what is Krishna concerned with? Krishna is more concerned with what you want to achieve, much more concerned with where you're going and what you're looking to achieve than where you're at the present time. We're like cripples. We're in the material world and we've crippled ourselves, or we've allowed Maya to cripple us. So now we're like trying to walk. So Krishna sees that we're trying to walk. He doesn't see that we're crippled. He doesn't see that we're falling down. Why? Because devotion, bhakti is a relationship. So in relationships, you see what's in the heart of the person. You don't see externally their handicaps. Just like we gave the example, you want to buy me a sweater. So let's say you're wealthy, you buy me a cashmere sweater. But let's say you're not wealthy, you buy me a synthetic sweater. But you bring it to me and say, Prabhu, this is all I could afford, but I really wanted to offer you something. I just wanted to give you something, and I know it's getting cold now in Mayapur in the winter, and I don't know if you have a sweater, so please accept this. So what, and I look at the sweater and I go, polyester, I don't wear polyester. Polyester is not healthy. Polyester catches on fire, I'll be dead. You know, I don't think like that. I just look at this person who's got tears in their eyes, who's offering me this sweater, just begging me to take it. That's what I look at. So similarly, when you are trying to serve Krishna, Krishna looks at what is your intention. Oh, Krishna, I want to do this purely. I want to make this offering purely, but I'm thinking about eating it. Oh my God, I'm so bad. Oh, you're banging your head against the wall. You don't know what to do. Maybe you think, well, suicide's the only answer. I'm never going to get this right. You know, this is too hard. No. Don't lament for where you are as long as your intention is in the right place. As long as your goal is pure devotional service, that's what Krishna sees. He sees the intention. He sees what's in the heart. Because Krishna, you see, you have to understand, we have this all Christian Judeo conditioning where it's all like how you perform. And corporate world, it's all about how you perform. Krishna is not looking at how you perform. He's looking at your heart because it's a relationship. It's just like when you have children. You know, they do all these things that endear you to their heart. It's not like you're analyzing what they do. No, you better play with this toy this way, because if you don't play with this toy exactly right, I won't love you anymore. You go, oh, that's so cute. He's taking the whipped cream and he's smearing it all over his face. Look at him. Let me take a picture. That's what endears you, right? It's not, oh no, you stupid kid, why are you putting whipped cream all over your face? You're just laughing at it while you're wiping his face and worried about him getting whipped cream on your brand new sofa. Still, you're laughing because it endears you to your son or your daughter. It endears you to your heart. So that's Krishna. So we see all the mistakes we're making. So in that, understand that what you want to achieve, if you want to achieve pure bhakti, if that's your goal sincerely, if that's what's at the core of your heart, that's what Krishna sees. That's the most important thing. That's what matters most. The other stuff, the conditioned response to situations, that we have to tolerate. It's just there because it's residual. The Prabhupada gave the example, if there's camphor in a pot, and you clean the pot out as best you can, it's still going to smell a little bit like camphor. Because camphor's, its odor has, or its fragrance, depending how you look at it, has stained the pot so deeply, some of it's going to be there. So in our conditioned stage, we're cleansing, but there's this odor of Maya still there. Oh, I was offering this, and then I thought of enjoying it. It's just, of course you did. You've been thinking that way for a million lifetimes. It's a habit. You're trying to change it. You can't change a habit you cultivated in a million lifetimes in a few years. So we understand that. So we tolerate it. It's such an important point. Krishna is Rasaraj. He's all about relationship. He's not all about ritual and formality. He's about what's in the heart. That's what bhakti is. Everything bhakti is all about relationship. It's not about formality. The formalities are only there to enhance the relationship. But the real important factor is the heart. So as long as you get that, then be kind on yourself. Don't beat yourself up. you're okay. You're just doing normal. This is just normal for the process. Does that make sense? Makes sense to me. Okay. Now we're reading the comments here. Yes, you're a newbie. I'm sure he understands. Noza, you hit it on the head. Nozu, you hit it on the head exactly. Okay. So, Maya's not your enemy. She's there to remind you. Actually, excellent point. Excellent point. Actually, we will read next week that Prabhupada, it's in the Jivadharma, and Prabhupada said, Maya will help you. She is not your enemy. She will help you. And what happens is when you hit a certain level, number one, Maya helps you by causing suffering. But when you hit a certain level of Krishna consciousness, she actually pushes you to Krishna. She actually helps you become Krishna conscious. Wow. Prabhus, look forward to that day. One day, Mayas are going to push us to Krishna consciousness. Isn't that amazing? What a day to look forward to. We have a lot of things to look forward to in Krishna consciousness. Isn't it? So, okay. Karma. Karma is balancing. Karma is Krishna's... Karma is Krishna's law. It has a function. Every law Krishna makes, ultimately, its function is to get us out of here. We are so comfortable here, it's ridiculous. Krishna has to knock us in the head to get us out of here. It's true. It's like we don't want to get out of here. We're like, you know, embedded. We're so embedded in this world that Krishna has to do something to shake us out of here. If we have the pure desire, we have a strong desire to get out of this world, Krishna doesn't have to do that because we're doing it to ourselves. It's only when we are not getting ourselves up, Krishna has to come and pick us up. And sometimes it's painful the way he has to pick us up because we won't move unless we get really shaken up. It's just the reality of the way it is. So, if you don't like that, if you're afraid, oh, Krishna, don't shake me up, I don't know if I could take it, shake yourself up. Then he won't have to shake you up. Just get up, right? You try to wake your kids up, and they don't get up, and you're waking them, get up, get up. Sometimes what do? You pick them up. You just pick them right out of bed, and they stand up, and they're still sleeping. They're all over your body, and they're still sleeping, and they're standing up. So, if they just get up on... And then they're complaining, why did you pick me up? I was still sleeping. So Krishna doesn't have to do that to us if we get up, but we don't always get up. So he does it. He shakes us. Shake yourself, get yourself up. He doesn't have to do it. So let's see where we are now. A lovable parent speaking to us, yes. And we're stubborn, yes. And... suffering makes you feel closer to Krishna, yes. And Krishna consciousness is a taste you have to reacquire, yes. And Sushma has a statement or question. If the soul is part of pure Krishna's energy, energy cannot be good or bad. Mind and body can be, but not the soul. So when we die, soul sheds both body and mind. How does an energy form gain anything from our karma? Not sure of the question, but let's go back. If the soul is pure, part of Krishna's energy, energy cannot be good or bad. Actually, it is good because it's part of Krishna. So in that sense, it's pure. Sachidananda. So the soul is good. I mean, if you want to go to a non-dual stage of consciousness, you could say, yes, there's nothing good or bad. But that non-dual stage of consciousness is really applicable not to the soul. It's applicable in the context of the material world. When we talk about duality and being free from duality, we're talking about being free from the duality of good and bad within material conceptions. And good and bad within material conceptions is, I like this, I don't like this. This will make me happy, this won't make me happy. So we are taught, don't praise anything, don't criticize anything, because then you're saying this is good for sense gratification, this is not good for sense gratification. So that it's only about matter, to think this matter is better than that matter. It's all matter. It's all good if you use it for Krishna, and it's all bad if you don't. But from the duality point, say it's all bad. It's the material world. But the soul is not part of the material world. It's its own energy. So, and it's Krishna's energy in that sense. Or it can't be good or bad. It's good when you use it for Krishna. Mind and body cannot be the soul, yes. So when we die, soul sheds the body. How does an energy form gain anything from our karma? Because karma, you travel when you die. If you're not pure, your subtle body continues. And Paramatma continues with you, and so therefore Paramatma knows what your karma is, and he makes the arrangements for you. It's Krishna's arrangement. The karma will continue because it's created, and desire continues because desire is situated within the subtle body, and Paramatma knows the desires. So I'm not sure what you mean by how does an energy gain anything from our karma. But maybe it's that question of because the karma is a purifying process, because through karma we come to our senses. And then we understand, it's just like if you punish a child. Why do you punish a child? Because you're trying to make the point they did something wrong. And so they understand, if I did something wrong, I get punished. So that means whenever I get punished, I did something wrong. I do something else, I don't get punished. That means it wasn't wrong. So then the child thinks, well, why did my mother punish me? She just came and told me, don't come out of my room for an hour. Now I have to figure out, what did I do? Because Krishna doesn't, when he punishes us, he doesn't come and tell us. Like usually when you punish your child, you tell them why. But Krishna doesn't directly come and tell us. So now we have to figure it out. Okay, why? Why am I suffering? What did I do? And then we go back and come up with a conclusion. Oh, I must have done this. Or I think I did that. And that caused suffering. So then we put two and two together. And then it purifies us. It's not purifying the soul, it's purifying the contamination that's covering the soul. It's purifying the subtle body. I don't know if that answers your question exactly. Maybe you're getting to another point. The energy, the soul, it's in material consciousness, the soul and the subtle body, they're not separated, they're connected. So and the soul's pure consciousness manifests through the subtle body. So if the subtle body is impure, it therefore is like light going through a prism. So it's not the pure light of the soul is going through the modes of nature through our consciousness. So what comes out is not pure. So the soul is always pure, consciousness is impure, and therefore the karma is meant to purify the consciousness. And then the mind, body, and senses simply reflect the pure consciousness. How do we prevent the enjoying mentality from coming in? Very good question. That was the topic of a 15-hour workshop last weekend. But I will give you a 1-minute answer for the 15-hour workshop. We have a belief at the core of our being, a conditioned belief, that we can actually enjoy the mind and senses. And it is a fact, which we all have to admit, if we could actually enjoy the mind and senses, we would have virtually no interest in God. And the only interest we would have in God is if he could help us enjoy our mind and senses better than we can enjoy our mind and senses better. And if you study religion in the modern context, basically that's all it is. It's people who figure that if I do something pious, I can enjoy better than if I do something impious. So that conditioning, that is a core belief, and we have to change that core belief. To what? I'm servant, I'm enjoyed. I am not the controller. So at the core of our material being is this I'm enjoyer, and that's why we spontaneously are attracted to material enjoyment. Bhagavatam says that our senses And our sense objects are like one. What's a sense object? For the eye, it's form. So form and the eye, it's like they're intimately connected. It's just the eye is attracted to attractive forms. It's the ear is attracted to attractive sounds. The tongue is attracted to attractive tastes. Right? It's like we can't change that. Whenever the enjoying propensity comes, we have to see that object in terms of how I can serve it, not how I can enjoy it. So I want to enjoy this. Say, how can I use this in Krishna's service because I'm servant? That's the idea. It takes practice. It's a reconditioning. Okay. Pallavi, yes, I became a bit too comfortable. We're all comfort. Comfort is the enemy of bhakti. So, if we become too comfortable, too happy, Krishna may want to shake us up. So therefore, how do we shake ourselves up? We do a little austerity. Now, I have been preaching. Thank you all for staying. We're on a topic and we can't end. We just have to keep going. I'm keeping you up late. Well, I'm not keeping Leslie up until 8 because she's on the West Coast, but some of you I'm keeping up late. So, Balaram Leela, you're on the West Coast. We're not keeping you up late. So, I've been telling devotees something that they may not be aware of, or they may be aware of and are trying to desperately forget. Prabhupada said, we should rise by 4 a.m. And then you think, well, he said that to the brahmacharis. No, he said it to everybody. Because if you read his letters about getting up at 4 a.m., he doesn't say, note, this is just for brahmacharis. Or note, this is just for people who live in temples. He said it for everybody. Now, is it practical for everybody? Maybe you work late. Brahmacharis in temples do not work late. Okay. It's a principle. We're discussing a principle. This is a detail is get up at 4. The principle, obviously, is get up early. Okay. Now, just recently, in my trip here to Bangalore, I am in Bangalore, India, and Bangalore, India, for India, is quite a nice city. Actually, I completely forget I'm in India when I'm in Bangalore, because it's a clean city, and it's not overly populated, and it's different from a lot of other cities in India, and I'm living in a nice house, eating nice prasadam, and so it's just kind of like I could be anywhere. And when I first went to India, 1975, it wasn't so comfortable. So I was, as it is now, so I'm living here and I'm realizing, and I'm meeting different grihasthas, visiting them in their home, and I'm realizing that life is quite comfortable in India, what to speak of everywhere else in the world, that we don't have a lot of austerity in our life. So I began realizing, one little austerity, we have to do some austerity. If we get too comfortable, it's not good. We have to do some austerity. So what is the austerity? Wake up early. Get up early. It's an austerity, but it's a little one, but it pays big dividends. It's an incredible investment. Get up early. What an investment. It'll pay you in Krishna consciousness manifold times. So we have to do some austerity, voluntary austerity, shake ourselves up a little bit. That's Krishna consciousness. You know, we get too comfortable, dangerous. Everything's good, Prabhu. Yeah, I'm comfortable. Yeah, I had a good time at the temple. Yeah, what's for dinner? Cool, pakoras, chutney. Yeah, sounds good. Life is good. Yeah, I'm enjoying Krishna consciousness. No. Get up early, Prabhu. Do a little austerity. Chant your rounds in the morning. Yeah. Holy K says, your mom throw water on you. Yeah. That's also an austerity. Okay. So, Sushma says, exactly, good and bad only exist in the material energy. World energy is pure, yeah. So this is a nice point. I'll say it again, because some of you might have missed it. In the scripture, it talks about freedom from duality. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, it says, a sadhu, a pundit, he sees pebbles and gold as the same. A vaishya does not see pebbles and gold as the same. Why? Because they're not the same. Because gold is gold. You can get things with gold. And pebbles, you can't get anything with. Except maybe you can use them for construction. So there's obviously a difference between pebbles and gold. And from the practical perspective, you don't have to be a Vaishya to know the difference. And if you see pebbles and gold on the ground, you're going to pick up the gold because gold can be used. And pebbles can't really be used for much. So on that level of practicality, you make a distinction. But on a higher level, why does it say he sees pebbles and gold as the same? Because on a higher level, everything in the material world which is not engaged in Krishna's service is bad. It's just, it has, you know, it's gold, but it's bad. And that gold is bad because it keeps you in the material world, so it's bad. If you can use that gold for Krishna, then it's good. But that's beyond the duality. So that's why there's a verse, and it says, don't praise anyone or don't criticize anyone. And then you think, but Prabhu, shouldn't I praise devotees? Yes, this is different. It's dealing with material reality. You praise, that's a really nice car. Ooh, that car is ugly. That's a beautiful house. That's an ugly house. That's a nice guy. That's a bad guy. What it's saying is that we are meant to transcend this duality by seeing that in the material world, unless anything can be used for Krishna, it's bad. So don't distinguish. This is good and this is bad. It's all bad. What's the example Prabhupada gives? Wet stool and dry stool. Is wet stool better than dry stool? And the wet stool is laughing at the dry stool, saying, hey, you're all dried up. Right? So the dry stool, dry stool's better because you can use it for fuel. Anyway, that's another point. But it's the same example. It's all stool. So we're taught on one level to see beyond duality in this world that nothing's good or bad. Because it's all death-producing. It's all leading us to death. You have lots of gold, and you employ that gold in your enjoyment, and that creates another body. So that's all. It's bad. It's not good. Okay. Materially, now, practically, we can analyze. Gold is better than pebbles because with this gold, I can cash it in, get money, and I can buy books and distribute books. Or I can build a temple. I can use it for Krishna. I can maintain my family, and I'll have all this gold, and I can use 10 hours a day, 8 hours a day. I don't have to work. I can serve Krishna. Great. Perfect. That's different. That's going beyond the duality. So I'm very attached to sleep. Yeah. So, we all are attached to sleep. It's a part of the four principles: eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Those are the animal principles, right? So higher consciousness, Krishna consciousness, is the opposite end of animal consciousness. What is animal consciousness? Animal consciousness is interesting. The animal thinks, is it going to eat me? Is it going to kill me? Or can I kill it and eat it? Or can I have sex with it? That's animal consciousness, right? And where is there a good place to lay down because I'm really tired? Isn't it? And some animal comes walking by and bark, bark, bark. Get out of my way or I'm going to bite you. One time Prabhupada said, animal consciousness is, the dog is barking. Everybody walks by and the dog is barking, but the dog doesn't think, you know, I've got a barking problem. I'm like, these people aren't doing anything and I'm getting mad at them. Maybe I shouldn't bark. Maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe I have to be more introspective and try to understand, where is this barking problem coming from? Was it my mother? She barked a lot at me, and now I'm barking. And, you know, maybe I should go to the dog psychotherapist. You know, we've got to deal with this barking issue. It's not right. The dog doesn't think like that. The dog just barks. That's animal consciousness. So we are spiritual beings. Krishna's given us a mind and intelligence. But what happens to the mind and intelligence? It becomes very much influenced by these animal propensities. So what do? We do a little austerity, Rati Kelly, Radhika. And what's the austerity? We get up early in the morning, do a little austerity. The best austerity you can do, get up early and chant year-round, very attentively. We do some austerity. So, N, Nimzu, Holy K, what is your austerity? Turn off the television. Take the cigarettes and throw them out the window. That's your austerity. I just wrote an article. It's coming out in the newsletter. Maybe you'll get it. If you're not on the mailing list, just write your email address on here and Pallavi will get it and send it to you. How do you do anything? You make a free will choice that I'm going to do this, determination. For the service of Krishna, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to stop doing this. And you can do it today, right now. No more cigarettes. Today, right now, get up early. You can do it all. You have the power. Krishna has given you the free will choice. You can do it. You only have to believe you can do it. We don't understand, we can't. So we have to get this article. It's also going to go on Dandavats. It's called Just Do It. It will help you with this. Whenever you have a how do I do it, the answer is always you just do it. You need reasons to do it, to be committed. You may not have enough reasons, but ultimately you can do it. You can make the choice. Pallavi says, the heart should also qualify as a sense object. Not actually sure what you mean. The mind is the center of the senses. So the mind is the sixth sense, if that's what you mean. Enzumu. Enzuma, I call her Holy K. Holy K, don't try, just do it. Trying means I don't want to, but I know I should. I know I should, but is a symptom of the mode of ignorance. If you're in the mode of ignorance, you won't be able to quit. When you come to the mode of goodness, the symptom of the mode of goodness is, I know I should, and I'm going to. That's the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness is you make a decision and you do it. The mode of ignorance is you make a decision and you don't do it. And the mode of passion is you make a decision and you only do it if it's enjoyable. The mode of goodness, you do it because it's right. The mode of passion, you do it because it's enjoyable. And the mode of ignorance, you don't do it. You just think about doing it. Read Bhagavad Gita. That's how it explains it. So, Holy K, come to the mode of goodness. Radhikeli, Radhika. When you're in the mode of goodness, you can say, I'm going to get up early. And guess what happens? You actually do it. Wow, amazing. It's amazing. It actually works. Okay. Quit smoking, but still working on the ladder. Good. Okay, one down, one to go. Entertainment. Okay, here's my prescription for entertainment. Television, movies, rock and roll, whatever. If you're really addicted to it, then this is what you have to do. For every hour of entertainment, you have to read 1 hour of Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam. Now, the ideal thing is, for every 1 hour of entertainment that you used to do every day, you read that same amount of Bhagavatam, but you don't do the entertainment. So that's step two. If you can't get to step two, just do step one. And step one will help you get to step two. Because what entertainment is doing, it's bringing in the modes of passion and ignorance right into our house. It's bringing in material contamination full-fold. Not only into your house, but into your mind and heart. Because when you're in this, maybe it's the alpha mode, or what mode you're in when you're watching television, the vibrations, the sound, when you're in that mode, it's going straight into your subconscious. It's programming you. So, you know, it's not a good idea to get programmed. Unless the entertainment you're watching is uplifting you, it's degrading you, obviously. So be careful about what you allow into your house. Video games, another addiction. The only addiction left to conquer now is texting. The all-pervasive, ubiquitous addiction of the modern age, texting. I don't know if I can give up that one, Prabhu. At least give it up while you chant japa. Do me that much of a favor. Turn your phone off when you chant japa. And, okay. All right. Sushma, thank you for a wonderful class. Holy K says, Justin, maybe you should ask him how to wake up early, even on much-needed meds. Well, that could be more difficult. Indeed. All I would say is try to regulate your schedule so you don't stay up late, because that's another Western disease. Staying up late is symptomatic of the mode of passion. Symptomatic of ignorance is you go to bed early and you get up late. Symptomatic of passion is you go to bed late, therefore you get up late. And symptomatic of goodness is you go to bed early and you get up early. So if you can reorient your schedule more to get up early, then do it. Okay. Holy K has to leave. And Nozu, also known as Justin, is bidding her farewell for now. They do read Bhagavad Gita. Okay, so as much Bhagavad Gita as you watch entertainment, and someday minimize the entertainment to only something that's uplifting. And if you read the Bhagavatam, then yes. Ratikeli Radhika is asking, you please post your class schedule in Bangalore. Want to attend? I'm leaving tomorrow morning, so the class schedule is I'm at the home of Suresh, and we're having kirtan tonight at his house at 7:30, and then I'm leaving. So, Suresh, if you don't know Suresh, then call me at this number. This is my India number. And I can tell you, I can let you talk to him, and he'll tell you where we are. And then I leave tomorrow morning, Thursday. Ah, Ratikeli Radhika got up early. Yes. Okay. Everybody get up early. And next week we'll talk more about how we got in this mess and how to get out. Good topic, isn't it? So, thank you all for attending. Pallavi, Leslie, Murali, Ratikeli Radhika. Anna, all the way from Kansas City. Monica, all the way from Bangalore. Balaram Leela, all the way from Seattle. And Holy K and her partner Justin, all the way from Ohio, where it's gray and cold right now. And Manjesh from Toronto, I believe. Is that correct, Manjesh? Thank you all for coming. And sorry we went long, but it's a hot topic. And would that kirtan be broadcasted? Well, could be. If I turn my computer on. But 7:30 in the evening? What time is that in 7:30 in the evening? I don't know what time that is in America. Maybe that's a good time. Yeah, if I remember, I'll broadcast. You're welcome, Ratikeli. And, oh! Ha ha! Hare Krishna. Well, Leslie was multitasking. She was listening to two classes at once. Wow. She is empowered. Okay. I'm giving you my number, Ratikeli. Okay, there it is. That's my India number. And 20 until 10 here, yeah. So 7:30, 20 until 10. So that's 7:30 tonight. It will be like 10 in the morning for you, 9:30 or 10. Okay. All right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We'll see you next week. We'll be back in Mayapur. And Hare Krishna to all of you.